Welcome to Making the Difference, a series of programmes from Mary Immaculate College about students and staff, past and present, who have made a difference in some way to the world today. Each episode acts as recognition to a different person for the great and often unrewarded work that they do in their day-to-day lives. Let's hear from today's candidate.
My name is Eleanor McSherry. I'm doing a Master's in Philosophy and by research in Mary Immaculate College. I'm from Limerick City. I came back to Mary Immaculate College through the foundation course, the night course run by the college. And I have a degree in media and communications and philosophy. Growing up in Limerick, there was seven kids in our family, of five brothers and one sister. I grew up in around this city and went to Salesians only over the road. We had great crack growing up. We were like the Brady Bunch, so we used to kill each other 90% of the time. When I was in school, I was actually quite good in school until coming up to my leaving cert, and then I discovered there was a social life to this whole school thing, and I didn't get into the course that I wanted to do. So I went to Mickey Max Secretarial School, or as they call it, the High School International on O'Connell Street, and I went working. So I worked in insurance for a long time. And then after that, when I met my husband, I ended up having a couple of kids and I ended up involved in politics. I was involved with the Progressive Democrats for nearly 10 years. I was on their general council and we made policies, the policies for the party. And I was involved in the national strategy for youth suicide. And I co-wrote the Progressive Democrat, which ended up becoming a national policy on suicide, and I contributed to the national strategy on suicide. And then I was involved with the Sicilians Musical Society and the Limerick Musical Society. I did a couple of shows with them, and that's where I met Mike Finneran, who is here in the education and the department, the head of drama, and it's all his fault that I ended up back here. My journey to Mary I, because of Mike Finneran, I had for a long time regretted not going to college. And I felt at that stage that I was too old, or, you know, that I was past it, or that I wasn't academic enough. And so I said, he said, try the foundation course and see how you get on and see if you like it. And I tried the foundation course and I loved it. And I was particularly loved philosophy, which I didn't think I'd like, because the first three lectures, I hadn't a clue what the guy was talking about. And then it just clicked with me, and it would be a subject that I never would have done in college. I mean, to be honest with you, I couldn't even spell it at the time. So doing it as a subject wasn't really what I wanted to do. So then when I did the foundation course, I begged and borrowed and pleaded with a couple of people so I could come back to do the degree. And it was very hard because at the time my son was diagnosed with autism, and also my father was diagnosed with cancer. So it wasn't a good time to come back, but everybody was very encouraging. And my parents said that they'd do anything to help me to come back, as they felt I'd missed out when I was younger. Did Mary I live up to my expectations? Yes, it did, and more. I had worked when I was in Secretarial College, well, they call it a PA, business diploma. I had worked in UL and I'd worked out in the Alumni Association out there, which nobody knew what that was. Well, none of the students knew what that was. And I found UL a very intimidating place. And so I had expected that that's what Mary I was going to be like. But I found Mary I, especially when my father got very, very ill and when he died, I found that The staff were fantastic and everybody went out of their way to help me. And it's like a big family. And I found that the college was so welcoming that it was like being at home. And that's why I'm still here, because it's very hard to leave this place. And I have a huge amount of affection for Mary I. What made me choose the Master's in Philosophy? Well, I had a couple of things in mind for when I wanted to continue on with my education. with my son having his disability, I can't work full time. It's impossible. So I thought, as opposed to sitting at home and wondering what I was going to do with my life, I decided I'd further my education. But as well as that, I got bitten by this whole academic bug and decided that I wanted to further to look into things. But I'm also very interested in disability because of my child, but not only because of that, because my mother was the chairperson of the National Council for the Blind, and we used to have respite in our house when there was no such thing as respite for families with children who were blind or had multiple disabilities. So I was very interested in that area. So I was either going to pursue it in media or in philosophy. And I found that when I was doing philosophy, I was very frustrated about the fact that nobody talked about anybody with disability. We talked about people who are rational or the human being, but nobody talked about those people who were not classed as human beings and how do we end up with disability and that kind of thing. So that kind of really, really bugged me. So I brought a thesis to Chris Law and Dr. Chris Law in the philosophy department, and we discussed it for a while, and I ended up going down that road. But I find I'm a very reluctant philosopher because it's not really, I'm very attracted to the media and radio and film and script writing. I script write as well. And I found that I was a very reluctant philosopher. I kept coming back to it reluctantly, and it keeps being the solution to my problems, even though it's a harder route to take. And, you know, but I'm really, really enjoying it, but it's absolutely head-wrecking. And I'm always saying I got an assistantship, and I was there saying to the first years, I was going, we have to do a day, the open day. And I say to all these students coming in saying, why should we do philosophy? And I said, see all of those other subjects standing there, we are pre them. When you have maths, philosophy started. So, and they all think I'm a bit mad, but sure, what the hate. Autism, because my son was autistic, I ended up doing an awful lot of work in that area. Every parent, when you first get your diagnosis, it's a very, very hard time. It's like grieving for the future that your child just doesn't have. The first thing they tell you, not only with your diagnosis, is all the things your child can't do. And it's extremely hard for, once your child is born, you have all these aspirations for them, what they're going to do in the future. Are they going to be president? Are they going to be doctors? Are they going to be lawyers? And to be told that your child, you know, given a list of all the things they can't do, it's a terrible shock for a person. And you say that you're never going to, you know, that you're not going to become one of those people who's constantly shoving it in people's faces or telling people about it. And because the upbringing that I had, my mother's very, very Christian, and, you know, was a real regular mass goer, and she would have been very much that we keep within the family, we don't tell people about it. But I'm the complete opposite of that. I feel that a problem shared is a problem half, and that people have very, very good nature, and people do actually genuinely care about what's going on. So I got involved in the parents group, because once I was given the diagnosis, we were told nothing and we were left very much adrift. So I got involved in DOCA's Hope for People with Autism from the very beginning. They did a parents group, and I got very involved in that. And then that led on to, because I was doing media communications and I did psychology in first year, I helped out with The Advocate, because she gets very low pay. She's also a parent, and helps the parents discuss with the relevant bodies about who, you know, what can I get for my child? What are my entitlements? What do I need to do? And I ended up being very drawn to the PR end of it, because an awful lot of the parents find it very difficult to talk about autism or what happens to their child or what are their difficulties, because it's a very personal thing and they're very, very isolated and they feel other people won't understand. So once I got involved in that end of it, last year when they put the cap on the special needs parents, or the SNAs, the first what happened was they cut in one of the schools in Dublin, in Balrathery, St. Joseph's Special School, they cut over 2/3 of their teachers' resources and their special needs assistants. So they ended up, when they started out, they had 24 special needs assistants, and then they were now going to be cut down to 6. With a huge student body. And they were particularly fighting for it. And there was all these rumours and innuendos, and the government weren't helping by telling people information. So a group of us parents were on Facebook and we were all worried about it. And then we joined together to form the Special Needs Parents Association. And I was one of the founding members of that, and to help other parents, because the difficulty with it is if you have a child who's the only child in the country with a genetic disorder, who do you talk to? There's no other parent who can understand. We all have similar issues. We all don't know what our entitlements are, and we all don't know how to speak to the government, and we all find it very difficult to find our voice when our child has their diagnosis. And it's nice to know that other people have the same problem too. So we started last March advocating for parents. We went to the Dáil, we spoke to different political parties, which I had a huge experience in doing, and discussing policy and taking a kind of a no-nonsense attitude with the politicians, because at the end of the day, no matter how much rubbish they can speak about, they either yes, they can do it, or no, they can't do it. Don't tell me all the reasons why you can't do it, because I have to explain to my 12-year-old son why on Monday morning he has to go in and is left with no help in a classroom. So I got very involved in that. I was the vice chairperson for the beginning of it, but I found that it started to interfere hugely with my time. And I found that I wasn't able to give as much time to the group I was dealing with here in Limerick. So I pulled back and I'm now a regional officer. I've been on the radio a lot over these issues. And with the caps on the SNAs, we're now going into a new era of trying to deal with the new government but we have the same problem. The groups, children with disabilities and parents groups within Ireland, we have a hugely diverse culture, and we have a hugely diverse multicultural society now, and we need to be able to acknowledge that. And people with disabilities are very much a part of the society that we have today, and if we're going to include them within this society, we need to do it in a very unique and to keep these people on our side. If we lose that, we lose a part of our society. Our society is embellished and is We're a better society for it. You can measure how a society is working by how they treat the people, their sick, their children and the disabled. And we have to be able to acknowledge their contribution to our society. And we've got to stop thinking economically, because at the moment with the recession, we're thinking, what is their economic contribution to our society? We're not looking at the cultural part of our society. In the 1916 Rising, we fought to be Irish. We fought for nationalism and we fought for our culture. We fought to be able to speak Irish. We fought for all of these things. And to turn our back on the disabled within our society, we might as well tell those guys in the 1916 Rising not to have bloody bothered, because we don't care. And if we lose that, we lose a part of who we are. We lose a part of our identity. A song. Probably The Time Warp. Because it's kind of funky. And because coming back to college was like a time warp for me. I was meeting the first day in college. I met a guy who said, I was talking to him, I'd done a show with him. And he said, let's do coffee. And we were sitting down talking away, and his mother taught me French in school. And then when he started talking about his childhood, it suddenly dawned on me that she was pregnant with him when I was in school. And now I was having coffee with him, which was really bizarre. So it was kind of like a bit of a time warp situation, kind of funky, kind of weird. And it's great, because it kind of makes you feel more alive. You don't feel, I'm hitting the big 40 this year, and it kind of feels like I'm not that, you know, it kind of keeps me young. What difference do I think I've made to the world? I'd like to think that, not necessarily to the world, I'd like to think that in my little corner of the world, that I've made my child's life better, that I've educated people about autism and about the life of a parent with a child with a disability, and that if I can educate just one person about it, I feel that my life here hasn't been wasted.
This programme was produced by Wired FM and was funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland's Sound and Vision funding scheme. Wired FM would like to thank everybody involved in making the series.